Your dad was John McCain.
Yes. My dad was a huge music fan. I'm going to tell you right now, my dad loved Willie Nelson. And people are like, you can't say you liked Willie Nelson because he dodged his taxes, blah, blah, blah. Well, he loved Willie Nelson. He did.
Everybody thinks they can do it. How can I become a professional wrestler? You really can't.
I pulled out the gun and I shot two times.
We have a complicated family. We were all raised to argue with each other with intensity, with passion, but also to love each other.
This is WTMJ Conversations.
Welcome to WTMJ Conversations. I'm your host, Libby Collins. Imagine waiting your entire life to become a contestant on Jeopardy. You finally get the call, fly to Los Angeles, arrive in the studio, and wait in the green room for your time to go on stage and meet Ken Jennings. But does it always end up the way you imagined? Joining us is Nicole Hosse. She's a freelance writer right here in Milwaukee. And yes, she was recently on Jeopardy. And Nicole, I saw you. I thought you did really well.
Thank you.
Now, let's start at the beginning, though. How long did you want to be a contestant on Jeopardy?
I don't have that, like, lifelong wanting to be on journey because it never occurred to me that I could or that I should. So I did kind of apply on a whim, but I am somebody who loves trivia. We record Jeopardy and watch it while we eat dinner every night. Like, I am a lifelong fan, but I think it just never occurred to me that I could be a contestant. And so I actually went through a bit of a whirlwind and it all happened very fast for me.
All right. Well, let's talk about this whim.
Yeah.
So where were you? What did you do? And how did you say, yeah, you know, I think I'm going to try out?
So as a freelance journalist, I keep my own hours. And like in a perfect world, I would be up late and, you know, my day would start at like 10 a.m. So I am often up after my husband, who is very diligent and goes to bed at 10 p.m. I'm up alone. It's when I get a lot of work done because I can't procrastinate. I can't make a lot of noise and stuff. And so I had the TV on in the background and there was a commercial to sign up for the Jeopardy test. And I thought that I was signing up to like take it in the future, but you literally put your information in and the test starts, which I think ultimately probably helped me here in that I didn't think twice about it. Like the clock started. I kind of just had to start answering questions. And so I couldn't get in my own head about it or anything like that. But yeah, it's a take any time test. I mean, they're pretty clear about it. It was late and I was only half listening to the TV, but I was like, oh, I'm just going to go take this test or sign up for the test.
How hard is the test?
I do think some of it's luck of the draw. Like it changes. It's about 25 trivia questions. And, you know, if it falls in your wheelhouse, great. If not, then you're not making the pool. And so I didn't think it was especially hard. It felt okay taking it. I mean, there were definitely things I didn't answer and stuff that I just was like, well, I'll put something in. So I honestly, some of it I might have gotten right by accident.
How did you feel afterwards? Did you feel like you did a good job?
I did. I thought maybe taking it, I'd be like, oh God, I don't know any of this. What was I thinking? And like, no, I answered. It felt comfortable, but I honestly kind of forgot about it after that. So I wasn't like thinking about it. And then all of a sudden I got an email asking me to take the longer test, which is the second step.
So how long was it between the time you took this spontaneous test in the middle of the night and you got that email?
It was a short time. I believe I got that email on July 1st. So I don't remember the exact time I took the online test, but it was within a week or two. So the first email I have from Jeopardy is July 1st and I taped October 21st, if it gives you an idea of how quickly this all went.
All right. So now you get the second test. Is this a lot harder than the first one?
Yes. It's 50 questions. You take it on a Zoom. You don't have to talk with anybody, but they're just watching to make sure that you're not cheating or no one's feeding you the answers. And they give you a couple seconds per answer, same as anything else. And so you kind of just need to lock in. I did some very minor studying for the things that I know come up a lot on Jeopardy and are not my wheelhouse.
Like what?
Shakespeare. I mean, beyond the basics, you know, I just confused some of the side characters and which play they go to. And I did not before this know the president's in order. It's not a thing I'd ever learned. So I would probably need a refresher. Don't put me on the spot. But I did like try to memorize the order of the presidents because presidents come up a lot.
Did either of those categories come up on the second test?
I believe so. Yes, presidents did.
Okay.
So that was good. But yeah, it's again a bit of a, you just sit down, you take the test and then you forget about it for a little while.
Okay. So now you've done that. Now you've gone on and you're doing your thing and you're writing and all of this. What was the next thing that happened?
So I was very lucky to go to Europe this summer and we were planning to go for 3 weeks. And the day we left, I got an email asking me to do the next step. And I was like, And the next step is a Zoom where you're competing against other people. Like it's a mock Jeopardy setup. And so I immediately was like, well, I mean, I can figure this out from Europe if I have to. Like, obviously, I'm going to figure it out. And I just emailed and said, hey, like, I literally leave today. Is there, like, do you do this in, like, once a month or something? Could I get in the next? I figured the worst they could say was no. And they did. They were cool and were like, yeah, we'll just put you in the next group. No big deal.
Coming up on WTMJ Conversations.
I honestly think a lot of this goes down to luck and what categories you get.
Milwaukee freelance writer Nicole Hosse tells us how she impressed the producers of Jeopardy.
Now, more of WTMJ Conversations.
Welcome back. I'm Libby Collins. We're talking with Milwaukee freelance writer Nicole Hotze about how she got on Jeopardy. So now it's what month?
That was the end of July. So mid-August is when I did that third round. There are nine of us in there in groups of three, and you take like a clicker pen and you hold it up like it's your response button.
Seriously?
You
have your own pen.
Yes, and you have to show it so they can see you. They're mostly making sure that you're like understanding when you have to wait till the question is finished being read and you're not immediately clicking your buzzer. Obviously, they don't really know who's first, but we did about a half a board. I think they just want to make sure that, again, you can answer questions.
How did they determine which of you would answer that question?
Because they think they just picked. I mean, they said they were doing it by the clickers, but let's be honest, there's no way they knew who was doing it. Was Zoom.
So did you do pretty well?
I did, yes. Again, I honestly think a lot of this goes down to luck and what categories you get. And so it was just stuff that, like, I remember answering Louisa May Alcott for something, and like Little Women's long been my favorite book. And so, yeah, I don't know. I am someone who's generally a little nervous, don't love being in front of everybody. I'm a print journalist for a reason. But I think just anytime this stuff came up, I was really nervous, but able to like lock in and just be hyper focused in what I was doing and not think about any of the other stuff. And that wasn't like a purposeful, like, oh, I'm going to block it out. But I think I just got like so competitive and so like excited that I didn't think other than like, oh my God, I just got to get questions right.
Was it fun?
It was fun. Yeah, absolutely. And like I said, it was groups of three. And then when you're done playing, the producers ask you some questions and they ask the first group what their anecdote would be. So then I was like thinking in my head, and then they asked us a completely different question, which is fine. I thought it was smart. I think they're looking to make sure that you can be on air and be personable and like not be completely scared if somebody asks you a question you're not expecting when you're on stage.
So you share an anecdote with them. Did that eventually get on the air?
Kind of, yes. They asked me about what I do, which is write a bunch about women's hockey as a freelancer. And so they asked me a little bit about it and how I got into it. And then the producer had seen a recent documentary about some Paralympic sports, and I do write some about that. And so I was actually about to cover the World Women's Sled Hockey Championship, the first one ever. And so we talked about that. And the man said to me, like, oh, you light up when you talk about what you do. So I think you get me on what I'm like passionate about. And so I think it helped that I was almost rambling, but I think they were just excited because people tend to get nervous. And let's be honest about like a stereotype about people who are really good at trivia and things about like that. I think there are people that are just maybe not as socially apt, or however you want to say it. Like, I'm certainly not making fun of anybody. I just think like having a big personality helped me in this situation.
So how soon after that did you hear from them again?
Less than a month. So that was in August, and I don't remember the exact day, but it was early September. So I got a phone call that was like, this isn't your official call, but we're just checking all the legal stuff to make sure it hasn't changed. Like, you haven't been arrested in the meantime. You're still not like...
They ask you if you've been arrested?
They ask if you have a felony, and you can't be related to anybody at like Sony Pictures, and you can't be really close. I mean, they literally like, do you know Ken Jennings? And I'm like, I do not. So I got that call, and they were like, so this isn't your official, but this is like the pre-booking call. So I would expect a call within the next week. And that was the first or second week in September.
In the meantime, had you told anybody that you were in this process?
My husband knew. Mm-hmm. And then I happened to have friends visiting between getting that we think you're going to be booked call and the booked call. And so I did tell just like two of my good friends, like, hey, guys, this is like what's happening. But then once you actually do get the call, there's a lot of like secrecy. So I actually didn't tell them that I had fully been booked. I had told them that I might be booked.
All right. So tell us about that call, the big call.
So, you know, of course, I'm of an age, like, I don't answer my phone if I don't know who's calling. I mean, I saw it ring and I was like, if it's important, they'll message me or they'll leave a voicemail and then I'll know what it is and I can call back. And I think through all of this, it felt really surreal that like I had taken this on a whim and I didn't expect it to go anywhere. And so sort of every time I got the follow up, it was a little like, is it a joke? I mean, I didn't really think I was being punked, but I just was sort of like, what is happening? Is this a scam? And so when I got the official call, there was a bit of being very surreal and feeling like, is this legit? Like, what's happening? So yeah, I mostly just didn't believe. It still feels like I can't believe that like one night I was up too late and did something on a whim and it in 3 months put me on Jeopardy.
Coming up on WTMJ Conversations.
No, wait. You dropped off at the gas station?
Yeah. There's some of it that's very funny.
Milwaukee freelance writer Nicole Hotze tells us it's not all glamour to be on Jeopardy and how she got dropped off at a gas station instead of the studio.
You're listening to WTMJ Conversations.
I'm your host, Libby Collins. Let's return to our conversation with Milwaukee freelance writer and Jeopardy contestant, Nicole Hotze.
So let's talk about the booking itself. So they finally said, okay, this is official, Nicole. Mm-hmm. You're coming to Hollywood. How did that all go about?
I got a phone call, and like I said, it was early September, and they said your booking date is October 21st. We're going to send you an email with all the information, and they're not kidding. That email has so much information in it. And because second place gets $3,000 and third place gets $2,000, you pay for your hotel and flight out there.
Oh, really? They don't pay for it?
If you return, if you're like somebody that returns on a different filming date, then they would pay then. But that first trip, they do not pay for.
So this is all out of pocket.
This was all out of pocket.
So now you're investing.
Now I'm invested. But with the knowledge that you will, at minimum, be walking away with $2,000. And it did not cost that for me to get out there. So it was at least covered.
So they don't pay for your hotel either?
Mm-mm. Yeah, it's a little surprising. I would agree. I don't know how or what has changed post-COVID. When I got booked and I went looking on the internet for things other people had written or said about it, my experience was just very different because that was all written pre-COVID. And so like it used to be that there was a shuttle bus from the hotel and that doesn't exist. So I think things just changed. And I think maybe during COVID, they did more local people. So I think some of the transitions just changed.
Now, wait a minute. You had to get from the hotel to the studio on your own.
I did.
They didn't send you a car?
No, there wasn't. I took a rideshare. And because, you know, you sort of have to have like a pass to get on the lot and things, they tell you to get dropped off at the gas station across the street.
No, wait. You dropped off at the gas station?
Yeah. There's some of it that's very funny. You're just sort of like, I mean, I get it logistically. Like, you know, they don't want rideshare cars blocking the driveway that's got a big arm and they can't get in. And it wasn't a big deal, but it was funny to me.
So now you walk across the street from the gas station to the big lot. Now you're looking for the studio. I mean, how difficult is it to find where you're supposed to go? I'm amazed that they don't, like, it's not door to door.
Yeah, it wasn't difficult. What's funny about the whole process, and I mentioned this with that email. So there's like very long and detailed instructions for what you can wear or what you should wear. And that has to do with how it plays on camera. Like, I don't mind it or I'm not mad about it, but it was something that was stressful for me because I'm generally someone that wears like very bright patterned. And basically it felt like the rules were anything in your closet you can't wear. And I will say too that I probably just put all my stress about what was happening into like finding clothes. It was a good place to misplace some of that instead of freaking out about being on TV and like studying and being on within a month. I just was like, oh my God, what am I going to take for clothes? And they ask you to bring 5 outfits because they do 5 recordings a day. So if you won a bunch, you would have to change your clothes.
So now, wait a minute. You're left off at the gas station. Do you have all 5 of these outfits with you?
I'm carrying like a garment bag.
All right.
And also, just this is very like Wisconsin coded, but it was like upper 60s, low 70s there. Everybody there had the heat on. And so like they tell us that the station is, or the recording studio is cold. So to dress warm. So I've got like pants on. I wore like a cute little leather jacket and I get in the ride chair and the heat is blasting. And I was just like, what is happening? But that was the whole time I was there. It was really nice. And like the city bus had the heat on. And I just was like, California, you are not beating these allegations right now. But yeah, so I'm like going, I've got up early, they make you press all your clothes, you know, I've done my hair and makeup, the preliminary, they ask you to do the start, and then they touch you up with how they, and I get this thing, and I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to sweat through all of this before we even get there. And then I'm carrying my bag of 5 other outfits.
All right. So you get there, you walk across the street from the gas station, and you get there, and they what, send you to the green room?
Yeah. So first we start in like a parking garage because they wait for everybody to show up, and then you have to go through security.
In the garage?
Yes, you're in a
little
garage.
There's a lot of garage stuff going on
here. There's a lot
of
garage stuff. My first very fun picture is like, it says like Jeopardy contestants here, and I took a little selfie with it. I was the first one there. Very proud. I'm generally not an early person. I was like texting my husband, like, you should be very proud of me. So you wait there for a little while till everyone shows up. So you're just kind of sitting in silence as everybody walks up. And then the contestant coordinator grabbed us and then we walked over to the studio, which is actually quite small. And we walked in and went right into the green room, which is not much bigger than the room we're in right now. It's pretty small.
How many of you were there?
So there's enough for 3 per day, but with the return, I think it was like 12 of us.
Do they give you any idea who you're going to be competing against or in what order you're going to be called on stage?
No, it took a little while and then we figured out who was the returning champion, right? Like,
how'd you figure that out?
I think somebody fully just asked at one point. It was like, hey, wait. And I was wondering because, again, I had all of my stuff and I am a maximalist with dressing. So I had like jewelry, I had all my makeup, like I had a backpack full of stuff and my garment bag. And I saw a girl walk in with like just her purse. And I was like, oh, could not be me. Like, wish that it was me. Like, but I just remember looking at her and being like, there's no way I could have showed up just like that casually. And then it turns out she had been, they bring in an alternate just in case somebody got sick or something happened, that they wouldn't have to stop their filming. And she had been the day before's alternate, so her stuff was already there. But at the time, I remember thinking, not making fun of her, totally making fun of myself, that like, ugh, could not be me to show up here with like her one little bag.
Now, wait a minute. You mentioned makeup. Do you have to do your own makeup?
They ask you to do like a basic, and then we still went into a makeup chair, but I think they didn't want to like start from scratch. So they ask you to wear what
you're comfortable foundation with. Or
yeah.
Whatever.
Well, I did get yelled at because I have a bunch of freckles, so I never wear foundation because it never looks right when I do it. I just end up looking like a big layer over all my freckles. And so the woman was like, oh, you don't have any base layer on. And I was like, I do not. So she had to do that for me.
Did they do your hair too?
She was happy with how my hair was. So I was pretty happy. I was happy with how my hair was. I'm short haired, so you never quite know. You're like, you shower and you do it in the morning and like hope for the best. And I was pretty happy with it.
Still ahead on WTMJ Conversations.
It did sort of get my competitive juices flowing, right? Like I was like, I want to beat this guy.
Milwaukee freelance writer Nicole Hosse tells us her impression of when she found out she was going up against a super champion on Jeopardy.
Now, more of WTMJ Conversations.
I'm your host, Libby Collins. Welcome back to our conversation with Milwaukee freelance writer Nicole Hosse, who was a contestant on Jeopardy.
So you're there and you're now waiting and you're sizing up all the other contestants. What's going on in your mind as you're watching everybody?
I think it was too much nerves to worry too much about everybody else. I mean, I'm a journalist. I'm naturally curious. I was asking questions about like where people are from and like had a whole conversation about dogs with several people because I'm that person. But yeah, I was mostly just kind of taking it all in. The beginning's a little just sort of fast. You go out onto the stage to do practice so you can get used to being on the stage and get used to the buzzer and things like that. There's a whole lot of, you know, sort of the legal, here's all the things you know, standards and practices comes and talks to you and covers all that. You do some paperwork and you don't know what episode you're going to film until right before. So when we got ready to go, like Monday's episode, we knew the returning champion and they essentially pick names and put two people out there. So it's a very like roller coaster of emotion. Get ready to go on stage. Well, I'm not going on stage.
So now you've been called. You know it's your turn. Mm-hmm. How many episodes have they filmed before you?
3 and we went to lunch.
Okay, so this is a long day and mm-hmm. you're just sitting and waiting. Were you anxious? Were you nervous? Were you just like, whatever?
Well, I went against a super champion, meaning they had won. By the time I played Harrison, I think he was on his 13th win. And so I'd watched him sort of demolish 6 other people to start the day. So and that was the part that was, I guess, not nerve-wracking, but I was just like, I mean, it did sort of get my competitive juices flowing, right? Like I was like, I want to beat this guy. What do I have to do? And so I was probably watching the games a little more strategically at that point, but I'm watching for like what his like tendencies are. And like, he was very fast on the trigger finger. And also just, he had more practice. Like by the 4th game in the day, he's real comfortable with that buzzer. They talk about like, it can be harder for the person that's been filming all day just because it's exhausting. So that way there can be some fatigue, but I think he just was really comfortable on the buzzer at that point, which makes it harder.
Which you said, he was a super champion.
Yeah.
13 games already. I think he was what, the most winning champion so far this season? Isn't he like up there in the top?
Yeah, it was
of
like
all time
top 15,
people,
yeah.
Which
yeah.
is huge.
It's huge. His job is game show researcher. He does trivia research for a game show in England. So that's intimidating, right? Like, and he's got a PhD and there were several emotions, which was like, don't give up. Like, just because you're facing this guy, it's not all over. Psyching myself up. And I will say the Jeopardy people were like, everybody loses.
Even Ken Jennings lost.
Yeah, exactly. That's, you know, that's the thing. And so I was trying to not get too in my head about it and not get too bogged down in like, oh, I just need to beat him. But also to try and take what I could from watching the other episodes he was in. Like, he wasn't betting huge when he got daily doubles, things like that. So just trying to like take what I could. And when we practiced, people were beating him on the buzzer. Like, yes, he's fast, but it felt like, okay, he's beatable. We can do this.
When you were finally on stage, did you know the answers to everything?
I knew the answers to probably 2/3 to 3/4. We had a very tough round. We had 12 triple stumpers, which means nobody rung in. And that's incredibly rare. It's rare to have more than like 1, 2, or 3. We just had a really tough board. So no, I didn't. I mean, there was a whole category on trees where we all just stood there and like looked at each other.
Did they have any category that you knew, oh, I know all this?
Oh, I was so excited to get the sports category. There was an NFL category. Having watched all day, nobody else got a sports category. So I'm like, okay, there's definitely going to be a sports category. And you're just sitting there like waiting, like, come on. And so when it came up, that was probably the moment in my episode where I felt like, okay, I can do this. If nothing else, like, there's going to be some questions I most likely know the answer to. I'm going to have to beat everybody, that sort of thing. But it wasn't like the biggest fear. Well, there's two big fears. There's making, you know, making yourself look bad on national television. And there is, what if it's like the worst possible lineup of clues or categories for me? You know, you just get up there and you're like, okay, it's going to be like opera, Shakespeare, the Bible. That was my fear. It is all just luck of the draw. You watch other boards. Had I gotten other boards that day, I would have done better. And some of them I would have done worse. So when an NFL category came up, I was like,
did you get all the answers in the NFL category?
I got three of them because of the buzzer. I didn't get in on two of them, but I knew all the answers.
So how were you doing in that game? You're up against a super champion. You're there and there's another guy. And how did you do? I mean, halfway into the game, before they go to Double Jeopardy, how had you done halfway through?
I think I had about $5,000. I was about half of what Harrison had, which was sort of my goal the whole way, which was if I get a daily double, I can double up and make this a game. Because that was the honest truth about how things were going in every one of his games. Like, he was going to get money. He doesn't bet big when he gets daily doubles. I remember he was complaining jokingly that, like, he's failing at daily doubles. Like, he's not getting any of them right by the time it was my show. And so the goal was to be within striking distance of him. And I felt like I was doing okay with that. I remembered the first commercial break, which is in the middle of the first round. I realized, I was like, I have no idea what money I have. I just never looked. Like, I just got into the game and was going. And so I remember looking up and being like, okay, I'm doing all right. I mean, I had gotten in on some buzzers. And so it was like, okay, this isn't so bad.
Coming up on WTMJ Conversations.
Everybody was asking about how they could watch it. And I was like, well,
Milwaukee freelance writer Nicole Hasse tells us her reaction when she finds out her episode of Jeopardy is going to air in the middle of the night on Thanksgiving.
You're listening to WTMJ Conversations.
I'm Libby Collins. Today's conversation is with Nicole Hasse. She's a Milwaukee freelance writer and also appeared on Jeopardy. So now you go to Double Jeopardy. Did you get a daily double?
I didn't.
All right. So now your strategy is kind of pushed aside. But how are you doing in Double Jeopardy?
I'm doing okay. That was the harder board. I remember, so one of the things that happens after your game immediately ends is Ken Jennings comes over. Like, if you're watching an episode, there's no sound. It's, you know, the credits are rolling, but you can see him walk over to the lecterns and talk to the people. And so Ken marks some notes basically throughout the game and then comes over and asks you about certain questions. So he had ones for each of us. Like, that was a really tough question. How did you know that? Or for me, there was a question about the lowest rank of naval officer, which the answer was ensign. And it was funny because watching the show, it doesn't seem like there's a pause, but there was a pause when nobody rang in and I decided to go for it. And the thing was, with playing against Harrison, I was trying to be smarter about the risks I took. And it was funny because Ken said, oh, you were more conservative playing him. And I didn't like look at it as being more conservative. I just was trying to be smarter, was really conscious of the gap between us. So if I'm going to take a swing at a $2,000 question, like I feel like I should have a pretty good feeling that I'm going to get it right, because basically getting that wrong ends my game right then and there. And so, like, yeah, I guess it was more conservative, but it was just to me about sort of weighing the risk. And because he was so fast, you don't really have time to think about that. But because nobody rang in initially on this one, I had that half second to weigh the risk. I was like, no, I'm pretty sure this is it. And so I rung in.
So you get to Final Jeopardy. What was your score versus Harrison and the other persons?
Oh, Harrison, it was a runaway. I wasn't going to catch him. I had in the range of $7,500, I believe. But I had more than double the guy in third place, so I couldn't lose second place, which was the important part to me.
But you couldn't quite hit the
But
winner.
I couldn't double up enough to, arguably, he could bet a bunch and come, but that would be dumb. Like, the person that has more than double, they're never going to wager enough to lose that lead.
So you knew you weren't going to get first place.
I knew I wasn't going to win.
Were you okay with it?
I was. I told my husband on the phone that night that I felt like, given the circumstances I had, that I don't have regrets about how the game went. Meaning, like, I was happy with the questions I answered. I was happy with the things I didn't ring in on. I was happy with, because like partway through the game, I was not beating him on the buzzer. And so I was trying to adjust a little, like how quickly I was buzzing in. They tell you as we're practicing, like the big question board has lights down the side and you're supposed to wait for those lights to go out. And if you did that and then buzzed, you'd never beat anybody. And so you're waiting for the cadence of Ken to finish talking. And that's when the sort of window opens. But if you go too soon, you get locked out. And so I was trying to adjust a little and maybe jump to the gun sometimes. But I kind of felt like if I'm not getting in now, like staying this way is not the answer. So I have to try something else.
So when did you find out that this was going to be the Thanksgiving Day episode?
I think I knew that morning. They tell you, like, this is the block. So they film on Monday and Tuesday, and they do five each day. So that's a week's worth of – and so they're like, this is the one that's going to air starting this week. And then you're like, okay, that's true. That's Thanksgiving week. And then so the whole time I'm in the green room, I'm like, don't be Thanksgiving. Don't be Thanksgiving. And, like, we thought, you know, there's various Jeopardy fan boards and stuff. They were like, we're pretty sure if you film that day, it's this week. And I told my husband, and he was teasing me the whole time that I was going to get Thanksgiving, that I have to sit and watch it with his family. And so when they called me for the Thursday episode, they ask you to turn your phone off and put it away. And I was dying to pull my phone out and just sort of, like, send, like, sweary texts at my husband, like, this is all your fault.
Well, but more of a problem is the fact that Jeopardy airs here in Milwaukee at 6 p.m., except on Thanksgiving because of football. Mm-hmm. So what time did your show air?
12:37 a.m. the next morning.
Now, I happened to record it, so yes. I saw you the next day. But I thought, this poor girl is running in the middle of the night on a holiday. I mean, were you crestfallen when you found that out?
Yeah, a little. It fed into the – there was a bunch of – after filming, a bunch of ups and downs of, like, that was so cool and exciting and also, oh, my God, that's it. Like, it's over because it all went so fast. And then I hit the buzzsaw that was Harrison, and it was like, I mean, you don't get to go do this twice, right? Like, you're a contestant once unless you get called back for some sort of tournament. And so you're just like, wow, what a bummer that that's over, you know? Like, just it's a whole – but also the range of emotion of, like, that was amazing. I'm so glad I did that. And then you're like, okay, it's on Thanksgiving. And for me, I was thinking, well, it will be preempted in Milwaukee, so I don't have to watch it with family. Because the idea of sitting amongst everybody watching me on TV is, like, my personal nightmare. Like, you can watch it. I want everybody to enjoy it. I don't want to watch you watching me.
But were you just a little bummed out that it wasn't going to get the audience it usually
for
does?
Sure, yeah. Then when I was able to say I was on, everybody was asking about how they could watch it, and I was like, well, particularly, so there's also this quirk that the 12:37 a.m. airing of Jeopardy in Milwaukee is usually a rerun. So people were going to put in the recording, but we weren't sure if that was going to be it or if it was going to be a rerun, because Jeopardy's on at 12:37 every morning in Milwaukee. They just took away the rerun and put my episode in there. So there was some of that, and then every city is different. So I was going to be in Madison for Christmas, and Madison has it on their NBC affiliate, so it wasn't going to be preempted for football, but then they changed it and put a replay of the Macy's Thanksgiving parade. So I was like, man, I didn't even get preempted for live football. I got preempted for a replay of the Thanksgiving parade. I can find all the comedy in it, but the sort of, like, parent, the family wanting to know and me being like, I don't know. The bonus to all of this is that we're in the streaming age and Jeopardy just puts all the episodes for a week or two on both Peacock and Hulu. So everybody was like, when would I watch it? And I'm like, please do not bother trying to find it on your DVR.
So now as you look back, and here's the real corker on that. You said that that would have been Harrison's 14th win.
Mm-hmm.
How many did he win altogether?
He won on Friday and lost on Monday. So I just, yeah.
Wait, when did you find out that he was that beatable?
In I found out with everybody else.
Oh.
Yeah.
What was your reaction?
A bit of a bummer, I will say. Like, okay, why couldn't that have been me? Why couldn't I have been in the next cohort? I think you could what if it all to your blue in the face. So, as I said, I've gone through the ups and downs of the emotions sort of depending on the day, right? Like I said, flying home on Wednesday after filming, I was really bummed, you know? I just was like, that's not, you know, I could be happy with how I played and also just disappointed that, like, particularly, again, because it all went so fast for me. We're talking July 1st essentially to October 21st. And I had about a month to study and I did that a lot, and that was also during my busiest personal work season. And so, like, it was exhausting and a whirlwind, and then, like, you can't really tell anybody about it, and then it's just over. But then this past, like, week or two, when everybody was so excited about the episode being on, and, you know, I work a couple days a week at a high school, and everybody there was so excited, and, like, I was on their morning announcements talking to some students about it, and all the teachers have been so nice, and obviously friends from everywhere, and that part's been really exciting and sort of, like, redeemed the whole thing, even because, again, I was then bummed about the Thanksgiving where everybody's like, how do I watch you? And so there was, like, this big buildup, and then nobody could actually see it, you know, and then on, like, Monday morning, everybody's like, but I didn't see it. But then I was able to send links and stuff like that. So that and sitting at Thanksgiving dinner, it did air on Thanksgiving in certain places, depending on like what the city sort of TV schedule is. And so I'm literally eating Thanksgiving and getting texts like of my face on someone's TV. And also, I apparently make lots of faces that I did not realize. Again, it's a good thing I am a print journalist. So I was like, oh God, I'm going to be reaction memed to all over the internet. I make a lot of faces, apparently. And I'm getting them sent to me on my phone as I'm eating Thanksgiving dinner.
Is there any chance that you could be called back for another episode? Did they leave you with that as a possibility?
No. I mean, I think there is always that chance. But two things. One is that I got the final Jeopardy question wrong. At that point, I knew that I couldn't lose second place. And it didn't come to me. And I just didn't try that hard to
find
it.
What was the question?
It was about the highest. It was a play that has the same title or partial title as the highest grossing Marvel movie, and ended up, which is Avengers Endgame. And the play is Endgame. And I obviously knew it was Avengers. And I'm thinking to myself, well, it's not Age of Ultron. And it's not Infinity War. And Endgame just would not enter my brain. And also, I couldn't lose. Like, it didn't matter. It just didn't matter. And so I just decided to take a minute to look around the studio and soak it in. So in retrospect, like, knowing that not having gotten anything wrong and having a higher total would have mattered in terms of, like, if you get invited to a second chance tournament or stuff, I would have done that differently, but I, you know, whatever. It wasn't coming. It just, I knew it was Avengers, and I thought of, I'm thinking there's no play named Age of Ultron.
Coming up on WTMJ Conversations.
I forgot that J.J. Watt read the question, but I'm a sports girl from Wisconsin. Like, that is a question on a platter for me.
Nicole Hosse tells us the best part of being on Jeopardy.
Now, more of WTMJ Conversations.
And I'm Libby Collins. Our guest today is Milwaukee freelance writer Nicole Hosse, who was also a contestant on Jeopardy.
In spite of the fact that you didn't win, what was the best part of being on Jeopardy?
I think just the excitement of everybody else. The day of, well, I should say two things. One is, and it's funny because I forgot a part of this. The whole thing happened so fast. You're watching other people and you go on stage to practice. And so you get answer some questions then. So afterwards, I kind of didn't remember which questions I answered during my actual game. I knew that I had gotten, there was a question about Reggie White, and I knew I had gotten that correct. I forgot that J.J. Watt read the question until the clip started making the rounds. So that's kind of funny. But that is, like, I'm a sports girl from Wisconsin. Like, that is a question on a platter for me. And I, like, that was just such a joyful moment to get in, to beat Harrison, and to be able to answer that. I think if I'd answered no other questions, it would have been a great day for me. Like, it just felt, you know, there's so many questions that were, I could have been in any other game. I could have been, you know, like, the fact that I played in the game that had this question that was so Wisconsin coded. You know, I'm someone, my dad in the early 80s had two TVs in the living room, and he did fantasy football by hand. Like, they went to a place, and like Monday morning he would, they like drew in person. Again, this is before internet, and can be like, he would hand calculate all the stats using the Monday morning box scores. Like, that's how I grew up. I think people like here can understand that, but maybe other than Wisconsinites aren't exactly the same. But like, yeah, that to me was, again, could not have been more in my wheelhouse, even though I don't write about football. Like, that's, it was the thing that made me take a deep breath. I had a huge smile on my face. So like, getting to answer that question and just like have sort of that very iconic moment was, on the day of filming, the best part. And then just getting to share it with everybody. Like, I, you know, people have sort of come out of the woodwork in the best possible way. Like, the support has been unreal. And I'm getting, you know, teasing texts about like, oh, we hate that guy against, you know, about Harrison. And just the support was, and hearing from people and everybody being so kind and, you know, telling me how much they enjoyed it. And oh my God, that was a hard board. But just like the human connection of it all has been really delightful and really, like, I think unexpected. I don't think I thought people would care that much. I, like, that's probably too naive of me, but I just, it didn't occur to me. And so, like, for me, this was almost over. And I had, like, told people a week and a half for 2 weeks ahead of time. And then there had been a little lull. And then everybody came back and was so excited about it. And so that bit was a little, like, unexpected to me and brought the joy of it all. And kind of capped it off with a really nice, like, little bow on top after some of the disappointment of, like, not doing what I wanted and all that, and then it not being on TV. And but just getting to share it with people. Like, I had a little watch party with a couple of friends, which I was not planning to, but they were like, we didn't watch it. Let's go somewhere and watch it together. And being able to laugh at myself and have fun and people be excited about the, you know, we were at a bar that some other people that were not with my group were there, but they were got excited and watched with us and they were cheering when we got the when I got the Packer question and things like that. So just that really nice community moment of it all has been delightful.
Nicole, you are amazing. We're running out of time, so I can't really talk to you about some of your journalistic things, but you've got a website, right?
So yes, I write, I own a website called Victory Press. It's victorypress.org. I write almost exclusively about women's sports. I grew up playing soccer. In 1999, I was 18. When everybody quote unquote discovered women's soccer, I was like, ooh, where you been? It was a little bittersweet for me. And so I write a lot about women's hockey right now. I cover women's college hockey. I'm the only national women's college hockey writer. I see a lot of like the progression of soccer and hockey. And I just got really, my husband started taking me to Badger men's games and the Badger women are really good and had a bunch of Olympians on it. And I was like, nobody's talking about this. Like, what are you doing? So now there's a professional league and there's been all this growth. But yeah, I mostly write for the little girl that I was that didn't have people that cared and paid attention.
Nicole Hosse, we'll have you come back.
Thanks.
We've been talking with Milwaukee freelance writer Nicole Hosse about her whirlwind of being on Jeopardy. She took that test on a whim, ended up out in Hollywood and found out she had to pay her own way. And then the disappointment of finding out her episode was going to air in the middle of the night on Thanksgiving Day. Now, if you joined us late and you want to hear our entire conversation with Nicole, go to WTMJ.com and share today's show with your friends and family, especially the ones who love Jeopardy. You'll also find a partial transcript courtesy of eCourt Reporters. For WTMJ Conversations, I'm Libby Collins.